this week, we're looking at innovation stories in our schools and in the marketplace. I first met Edna Hussey 17 years ago. She was the principal of Epiphany School, and it had just announced a merger with Mid-Pacific Institute. Hussey is an educator with roots in the Reggio Emilia approach to learning, similar to Montessori, which encourages non-traditional learning. Hussey was excited to share with us something that took off with the little ones this past semester. If you have a little one or have a grandchild, you can understand their discovery of the wonder of the world, finding codes from the preschooler's point of view.
Some of the children were outside working in the dirt, and one of the little kids said that there were too many spiders, and she was afraid of spiders, and she said, you know, we need to look for a map in the dirt, and this little boy picks up a leaf, so they're imagining that the leaf is a map of some kind, and she says something like, referring to a spider code. That's where the word was. Mm. And she says, we're detectives looking for spider codes. And it was just one of those regular conversations that the kids have in the playground, and teacher nearby picked up on this notion of codes. We were interested in finding out just why the child named X codes and why she said that they were detectives. So that was the basis, or has been the basis, for this truth about codes, which we haven't yet discovered what the truth is about codes, because it's still in process.
So this was something then you started this past fall.
We did. We started it back in the month of August when the children were in school. Sometimes the projects don't come up as immediate as that particular or this particular project, but this one was very intriguing. Just because as adults, right, from your perspective and my perspective, we immediately go to codes as having to deal with technology and computers. But codes has a different meaning for children. So we were interested in finding out what that was. And boy, since then, we know that this is a great project because they can't stop looking for codes. We can tell when it's a great learning project when children can't stop talking about it. And it carries through all parts of the day, and it carries on home. So, you know, kids sometimes have parents looking for codes, and parents will take images and send it over to the classroom teacher. So we have sort of a coterie, a collection of all of these images of what children believe are codes. It's fascinating seeing the connections that children are making. And even then, the physical codes, like, you know, an image perhaps of a leaf, and then they might find a code in a tree ring or a code in a flower, gets us to thinking about what codeness, what is codeness for children, and what does that mean also for adults? So the children have been making connections with things that they are now seeing in print. We didn't talk to them like, you know, like a barcode is, but they came to this by themselves. That they began noticing codes anywhere and everywhere. Anything that's a letter or a symbol or a number is saying to them, this must mean something. Mm. And really, that is the beginning of literacy. And to have these 3 and 4-year-olds come to this is really the best way to learn about symbolic representation, what all of these things in their environment means to them.
Well, I guess I think of codes, and I think of, like, secret codes and how excited I was as a kid. You know, it's like, oh, I'm a spy, and I'm going to look for clues, and
right.
I'm hunting for something, a treasure. But that's what I think of, you know, when you talk about secret codes. So it's kind of like patterns, and you're on a hunt.
Uh-huh. That's right. They're still on this hunt. That's how hot, we use the word, a hot topic. That's how hot this is for the children. They're constantly looking for these codes.
So this is something you thought, we need to share this. This is a wonderful an approach to learning and what we can do to nurture our kids' curiosity about the world.
What educators know is that children are naturally curious, and as they go through a school system or an organization, some of that decreases. So that by the time when they really should be curious, because they're about to enter into the workforce, a lot of that curiosity and wonder about the world diminishes. And that is disheartening because we need young adults who are passionate, still passionate about learning, still passionate about the world and the community in which they live. So that notion of nurturing this curiosity and wonder needs to begin early, and it needs to be in a space where other children talk with each other, because it's difficult to have that kind of conversation with an adult, but when they have it amongst friends, it's even much more surprising what children will be talking about and their own insights that they share with one another.
So this really is just caught fire.
Well, you know, it's an approach really that we have adopted here at Mid-Pacific. When we began our preschool in 2005, this comes from that Reggio Emilia approach.
Mm-hmm.
Reggio Emilia is actually a little, not a little town, 100,000 people in northern Italy. And they discovered a much better way of looking at children and really respecting and honoring what children bring. Not about seeing children as, I need to tell you what to do, or I will teach you, because it's this openness about what children have to teach us. And we don't, many adults don't view children as peers in that way, that we look down at them. Catherine, if we were to go to Reggio Emilia in Italy, I was there for two visits, and we bring the ideas back, well, it's going to be a little different, because here we are in Hawaii, applying an approach where culture is different, right? So we pay attention to the cultural environment, the physical environment. That all is integrated in an approach that is then unique to a community. So it's unique to us here at Mid-Pacific, but I'm sure it would be unique to any Reggio-inspired community around the world.
And so this idea about codes, I mean, is that something then you can take back to Reggio Emilia and say, we did this and look what happened?
Yeah, we could. We could. In fact, there is an organization, the North American Reggio Emilia Alliance, and they have asked us to submit, you know, some of our own teacher research, an article where we can share this. But, you know, we've also been sharing through presentations that we do. But we've been at this for 17 years now, and some of the best projects have been within the past 5 years.
Mm.
Last year's project was on mystery, and it started when we were on campus, and then we were in lockdown talking about mystery. Oh, and so we had to figure out how to continue this project through COVID, and it was amazing how it turned out. It fit very well, this idea of looking for mysteries in the world.
And so at that point, though, were the children at home?
Yes, they were at home. This is March, and end of March, April, and May. And the children had spent the whole first semester exploring the mysteries of a particular site, a popular shopping site, because the children felt that's where they could find the most mysteries. So they were out there maybe once every 2 weeks in a big store hunting for mysteries, like the mystery of multiple televisions or the mystery of lights. So when we were in lockdown, we had to figure out, how do we continue this kind of learning? And we then focused on where the kids were in their homes. And we knew that kids were sort of trapped in their homes. They couldn't go out. Many of us couldn't. And the only place that they could look at was from the view of their window. It might be a high rise or an apartment or a home here, you know, in Manoa. And the children talked about the mysteries that were out there beyond their window. So we talked about that kind of mystery, which led to discussions then about what kind of hope could be provided to the people that they don't know, they don't encounter anymore. So this, you know, that kind of mystery then. I mean, it was very touching. At the end of the semester, the children created signs. They drew signs, and they put them up in their windows for postmen to see, for a neighbor to see, so that they could communicate with their neighbor that they were doing well, but they were hoping that their neighbors or whoever would see the sign was also okay in COVID.
Mm.
They had hopes and dreams for the homeless, the doctors, essential workers, but they developed a real deep sense of empathy for those that they couldn't see. For a school that often takes students out on research trips, it has made us think very carefully now about how we can still sustain this momentum about wondering while we are in our classroom. So there are many things, right? Mm-hmm. Sometimes you don't have to look very hard. We talk about our backyards as places of wonder and lots of questions that we can raise about our immediate backyards just outside of our classroom. We also still have the ability to take kids on virtual trips. So, for example, one class last semester still took kids out virtually to Campbell Industrial Park to watch the birthing of an albatross. So those things are still very possible. And we've also been finding that there are silver linings, even with these obstacles in the classroom. Reaching out to other classrooms and having those discussions, which might have been more difficult in a classroom, tapping into people who couldn't make it to campus, but now we can just, you know, click on their Zoom link. We still find ways to have the children feel connected to a community.
That was Edna Hussey, principal of Mid-Pacific Institute's preschool and elementary school, talking about igniting curiosity, finding codes in nature, our keiki, decoding our world.